Pattern Podcast. Make left traffic, clear for the option.
Line up and wait, 7 range, 4 Mike Alpha.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, hold code on 133, ready to take off.
Robert Delta, 362, on Mike, enemy downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
I'm Brad.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
Welcome to episode 18 of the In the Pattern Podcast, and we're glad to be back, and we're all together, and glad to finally get this thing going. It's been such a long time, it seems like, since we did our last one, which actually at this time hasn't quite been edited yet, but that's will be coming out soon. We're going to get this thing going and see if we can get it knocked out in the next hour and 15 minutes or so, so it's not too long and drawn out. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Doing good.
Good.
Can't complain.
Brad's been flying all kinds of IMC, and John's got a new job, and Mark.
I can complain, though. I haven't flown.
since the last podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark's got to fly, but not PIC, unfortunately.
Yeah, that stinks.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The weather's finally getting nice out here to where, every day's a good day. So,
I get cold, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the weather's getting to the point here where IFR is fairly dangerous stuff.
Yeah, icing definitely around. It's like in the 60s in the morning. And, just last week I was at my kid's regional swim meet, and I'm like burning up, dying there, just getting a sunburn on the back of my neck. It was kind of ridiculous. So, anyways, time to open up the Line and Kugel's Oktoberfest. That seems to be a good choice for this evening.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Am I drinking an October? No, I'm drinking an Irish style red. Humble Patience by Magic Hat.
I love these beer names, man.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they were hammered while they were deciding on names, or if they just thought they'd be funny on some of these.
Doesn't matter.
And Brad was drinking something that was, what was it? Steel toe boot something.
Steel toe descent. Yeah.
Steel toe descent.
In fact, it's nearly gone. I'm going to have to head back there tomorrow and pick up another growler.
It's a
growler, huh?
Local company, huh?
Yeah, they're a local brew.
Sweet.
Always good. I need to go get some devil's milk. So
let's get going. Who wants to kick this off?
Well, what have you been up to, Chris?
Just a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Well, so obviously the last podcast we talked about my failure to complete a check ride. And so since then, I have completed the check ride. So I'd be glad to talk about that. It definitely went a lot smoother than the first attempt. That's for sure. So this one, the way I did it was I had to get the plane over at Deer Valley and then fly it over to Goodyear Airport to pick up my DPE. So I did that. I went over there, and of course we met inside and we talked for, I don't know, it seemed like about an hour. About the flight plan, because it was a different flight plan than what I first did. So that was good. It was good to redo some of that stuff, and I learned several different things while going over the flight plan with her. So that was nice. One of the things that she really hammered me on was just VOR tracking and this and that. So on this flight plan, we started off at Goodyear Airport. And let's see, we were going to end up at Wickenburg by way of the Buckeye VOR. And so basically, I just kind of explained to her how I decided on my way to get there and how I was going to track it and this and that. And it was a little different than the way she would normally do it, because she's really used to flying in that direction from that airport. But since I wasn't, I picked some specific landmarks and flew along some washes while I was taking off in order to intercept the VOR. And then once I intercepted it, I was going to be a straight shot from there to the Kingman Airport, pretty much. I was just going to use the VOR to track to it, and then the VOR to track away from it. And then by about the time I lost that VOR from Buckeye, I would be able to pick up the Kingman VOR and reel me right in. So she was happy with that discussion back and forth about the flight plan. And so we basically moved on out to the plane, and I just had it set in my mind. I wasn't going to let her, push me around in the plane and start taking control of throttles and whatnot. But that never really happened again this time anyway. So that was good. So basically, we took off and headed out towards my checkpoints, and everything was going good. We were on track for everything, and turned on to my heading of the VR. And one of the things that we did is that instead it seemed to be more of a lesson than anything. Would you guys say that you found your DPE to teach you more on the flight than just have you fly them? Or
I think I've said it a bunch that's exactly how it felt after the first maybe 10 minutes of the check ride. It was just like just a regular lesson, and I forgot the fact that I was on a check ride.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, it was a little different than the first time, and interesting that she was teaching me how to intercept the VOR, the radial that I wanted, incrementally, like at 5 degrees at a time, instead of, okay, you're coming up on it, and I need to make basically a 90-degree turn to get onto it, because obviously by doing that, you're going to overshoot it, and then you're going to be like waggling back and forth trying to get centered back up on the actual radial that you want to be on, Because that's not something that I had really done with my instructor at that point. So that was a good lesson to learn. I love VOR work personally. I think it's kind of fun. So we did quite a bit of that, and was circling around that Buckeye VOR quite a bit, and then she asked me. She goes, "All right, if I wanted to go to somewhere in California, somewhere not too far away, just basically one of the border cities to Arizona. I can't think of it off the top of my head right now. How would you get me there?" And basically, that airport is on the very, very, very edge of the chart. So, I said, "Okay, can you take the plane for a second?" And she took the plane. I unrolled the map as far as I could, and just started like estimating with straight edge, from here to there. And I said, "All right," I turned to this direction, and then that should put us pretty much in that heading, and I would use the VOR to follow that VOR, but I'd track away from the Buckeye VOR as far as I could to get there and so forth. So that we did that for a little while, and then basically she diverted me over to Buckeye Airport for all the landings, and that was kind of interesting because they were doing parachuting. They were jumping that day. And that was the airport that I was trying to stay away from as much as possible on my actual flight plan. I wanted to, stay at least 5 miles away from it while they were doing the jumping, and they were jumping all day long. But no, she wanted to go over there and have me do all my, short field and soft field landings and stuff like that. And I'm like, "All right." So we did. And not only was I, we're dodging parachuters, but we were also dodging birds, because they just decided that's where they I wanted to thermal for the day, so there's all kinds of crows everywhere. I'm pointing, oh, here's a bird, watch out, here's a bird. She goes, oh, don't worry about the birds, you know. She goes, I've hit a bird before. I go, well, that's fine for you, but I'm not interested today, you know, especially on my check ride. So, the birds stayed far enough away, thankfully, and I successfully made all of my landings. I had one landing that wasn't great, and she said, because she just chatters the whole stinking time in the airplane. I wish I'd kept audio of it. She does not stop talking. And it's like, I just wanted to say, you know, I need you to shut up for just like 10 seconds to let me get my thoughts together, please.
And you should say that.
Yeah. It's honestly, I really should have. Well,
a lot of them expect you to say that of, you know, hey, I need a sterile cockpit. I need to focus on the landing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because you'll have passengers like that that have no clue.
Right, right.
I just ignored her.
She said,
I just sat there. He's talking to me, and I'm just like I tried to say something, and then I stopped, and then I just flew the plane for a while, and then I was like, oh yeah, you were saying.
Well, when I kind of botched up this one landing, she goes, okay, all right, let's do that again, and this time I won't talk. I go, thank you. I go, because you keep talking and you keep making me want to adjust my, you know, glide path or whatever. I said, just let me do it. I've landed this plane 100 times. I can do it. And so the next time was just very, very, very smooth. As a matter of fact, my soft field landing, she, you know, really praised me on, because it was just, you didn't even know you were on the ground when you first touched. It was really nice. So, it was nice to hear some praise for a change instead of yelling at me in her German accent.
So now, just for clarification, was this Brunhilde again?
Yeah.
Or somebody else?
No, same one, yeah. I had told her that I was going to use her again, even though she said, you know, no hard feelings. If you want to use someone else, feel free to. And I was like, oh, heck no. I said, I'm going with you. I know what you want now. I can follow directions. That's not a problem. I'm not going to try and figure out some other DPE who has a different way of doing things.
So, gotcha. It didn't sound like when you were talking about it that it was the same person.
No. Yeah.
I thought it was somebody different. I was like, oh.
I started the airplane properly and
according to her.
Yeah. And I climbed out of the airspace like a homesick angel, you know. I wasn't waiting around for nothing. I remembered what she had to say last time. And took that to heart. I did everything that I messed up last time, according to her, and did it to her satisfaction this time. So after doing the short field and soft field, and what did we do? A slip. I did four landings there, three of which were good, and one of them wasn't very good. We headed back to Goodyear Airport, and then after I landed there, she had me do another landing there. I think it was maybe it was just a standard landing, because I think I did on my short and soft field over there, and other than that, all there is a standard landing and a slip to land, right? Been so long. I had this all fresh in my mind a month ago. So after I did my landing there, she goes, okay, well, you've passed. And I was like, yes, finally. As long as I don't crash parking the airplane, I'm in good shape. So we parked the airplane, went back inside, and she signed my ticket and went outside and took a picture with her, and everything's all good. Everything's good.
Awesome.
So since then, I did get my plastic license in the mail, and it sits where it's supposed to be sitting, over top of my driver's license in my wallet. So
nice.
Yeah.
Good job.
Mm-hmm.
Very well done.
Thank you. And since then, I've flown two times, but only one time in Formic Alpha, the Archer that I rent. About 5 or 6 weeks ago, I flew up to Flagstaff with my buddy Dean. You probably saw my tweet about that. He does a blood run up there takes a box of blood platelets up there to Flagstaff from Deer Valley, one like Sunday a month. And I flew up there with him this time, and when we landed, the tail wheel popped on the on his little Cessna 140. And so that was interesting. It we didn't even really notice it when on the landing. It wasn't until we were taxiing into the FBO, and he always kicks it left or right to park it, you know, and swing the tail over to go, you know, perpendicular.
Sure.
And it didn't want to go anywhere. And he, you know, hit the rudder and gave it some gas, and it still wasn't going anywhere. So he wasn't saying anything, but I know he was thinking something in his head. And then he shut everything off, and we got out, and he goes, "Oh, well, no wonder we're not going anywhere." And the tire had basically was half off of the rim. So so it's Sunday, and Flagstaff at the airport, which isn't a very big airport, so there's no services available on Sunday, and they didn't have the tire and tube in stock to begin with. So his wife drove up to pick us up and bring us back. So that's kind of a bummer for her. It's about almost a 2-hour drive. Oof. Each way. So we had to leave little 8-1 Lima up there over the week, and it got fixed. And actually, you know, praise to them, they did a great job at a great price. And he was really afraid he was just going to get shafted for something so simple. He goes, I wouldn't have been able to buy the tube and tire any cheaper than they sold it to me for. And the greasy mess as it is to change out a tail wheel, because you got to split the rim. It's worth the $75 they charge to replace it, you know?
Yeah.
So he was thrilled with that. So basically, the following Saturday, I flew him up there in the Archer, and my daughter Madison, who's 14, came along. And so they were my first passengers who I didn't have to pay to come along with me. So that was nice. So so I got to fly Dean for a change and do all the takeoffs and the landings. And I even demonstrated to him how the autopilot worked. And this was kind of funny. I go, let me show you how the autopilot works. Have you ever tried it in this plane? He goes, no, because he's starting to take his instrument and use this plane. But he's only got 3 flights in so far.
Yeah.
So I showed him how the autopilot works. It's an S-Tech 55. It's a real nice autopilot, 3-axis. But I only really know how to use, you know, the 2-axis part of it. I haven't figured out how to do the altitude in it yet. But I showed him how to do that, and my daughter Madison was like, no, turn that off. I want you to fly the plane. This scares me. You know, I go, watch this. I turn this dial, and I turn to the right, and I turn this dial, and I turn to the left. You know, you just turn the little heading bug, and it just goes whichever direction, you know, you want to point it to. So she thought that was kind of freaky that, you know, the yoke's moving by itself and I'm not doing anything with it. So it was a severely clear day, which was nice for visibility, but with that comes a little bit of turbulence. So it was a little bit bumpy, and I was a little worried about my daughter, because she will tend to get car sick. But she did very well. We landed, and she goes, she was feeling a little bit nauseous. So, you know, we let her get her legs back under her before we left, and waited for Dean to get his plane fueled up and stuff like that. And so he goes ahead and takes off, and we get Madison situated in the front seat now. And I set up my camera, because I want to record the flight with Madison on the way back. And so Dean takes off, and we're still sitting on the ramp, and finally taxi up to get ready to take off. We're behind, I don't know, 1 or 2 planes in line. And I figure, man, Dean's, you know, quite a ways away at this point, but my plane's quite a bit faster than a 140. He can do about 110 knots at best, so I should be able to catch him. So anyways, we get ready to take off, and you know, I've already did the run up and everything. We're cruising down the runway, and I'm not liking, you know, how it feels. It seems like I don't have quite all the RPM I'm supposed to. And I abort the takeoff, call the tower, and said, Flagstaff Tower, Archer 4 Mike Alpha, I'm aborting the takeoff and getting off on Alpha 4 over here. And he said, and I told Mattis, I said, don't worry, everything's going to be fine. I go, I just want to check some things out. And he asked me if I need any help, of course. I said, no. I said, I think I'm fine, and I just want to check some things. And then it dawned on me. I'm now at 7,000 feet. So, of course, I'm not going to get all the performance out of the plane as I was when I was in Phoenix at 1,400 feet, right?
Right.
So I lean out to get more horsepower. You know, full throttle, and you can lean it to max RPM. So I did that. We took off just normal, and everything was cool. We headed on our way back to Phoenix, and after I got out of Flagstaff's airspace, I turned over to a frequency Dean and I are going to talk to each other on. We just tune our radios to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and talk to each other. So I called up Dean. I said, hey Dean, it's Chris. Are you there? And he goes, yeah, I'm here. He goes, I heard you abort your takeoff. I was right about to, Sedona. So I started circling just in case I needed to come back for you. So that was real nice of him. Yeah, he goes, least I could do would be to come back and get you and not leave you stranded up there, you know, since you brought me back for my plane.
But wouldn't your daughter be stranded?
Yeah, probably, because I don't think Cessna 140s sit three people very well. She's small, but not that small. So we start heading that way, and we got a kicking tailwheel. I mean, tailwind. At one point in the Archer, I was doing 146 knots indicated.
Nice.
We were cruising. That's 146 knots ground speed. Sorry.
On the ground. Yeah,
yeah. So about 161 miles an hour, roughly. So we did catch up to Dean, believe it or not, after he was already, I don't know, 35, 40 miles ahead of us. But I finally did catch him right at the time that we both entered the pattern. So, and that got real dicey because we both entered the pattern right behind each other in the middle of Deer Valley, which is already, you know, a very, very busy airport. And, Dean got in to the pattern, and then this controller was really all over the guy who was behind Dean. Basically, the guy was like telling the controller that he was just going to do a 360 because he told the tower, he goes, I'm a quarter mile behind the Cessna. I need some spacing because I think he was a Seminole, if I remember right. So obviously he can't slow down to the speed of the Cessna. And the tower was like, no, follow the Cessna, blah, blah, blah. He goes, I'm a quarter mile away. I'm turning around, you know. And so then I ended up being behind Dean, and that guy ended up being behind me. Everything landed uneventfully, thank God, and we all made it back home safe. And it was a real good experience for Madison. I let her fly on the way back. She flew it for about a half an hour. And so she really enjoyed that. I kept telling her, which was kind of funny. I was like, okay, try and keep on this heading. I was showing her the HSI, you know, and I was like, try and, you know, keep it there. So then I see her and she's just staring at the gauges while she's flying. So it looks like she's flying IFR, you know. I'm like, no, you can look out the window. Just point towards, you know, what's directly in front of you. Like pick that peak of that mountain or whatever. And she goes, oh, okay. So she really enjoyed it. It's not something that she said she wants to like learn to do or anything, but she didn't enjoy having control of it though. So that's about it. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it, I guess.
Well done.
Thank you, Brad. I was gonna say
before you switch on, I actually had a situation like that happen too, where I actually had a Seminole coming out, and he was about, by the time I was turning from crosswind to downwind, he announced that he was 3 miles out, and we just let him basically pass us on the right hand side. And because, you know, I'm in the Archer and I'm doing all of a whopping 80 knots, and he goes right by us, and you know, we had told him, hey, it's fine, go ahead, you know, you're a lot faster than we are. But I'm surprised that the tower, I mean, I know they're a lot tighter, but I'm surprised they didn't have him do something like that or let him do his 360.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what the big problem was. It's just, you know, how the tower really wants to control that airspace, you know, but sure, at the end of the day, pilot's in command. So it's your safety, you know, that you got to be responsible for, and the safety of your passengers. So if you think you're too close, you're too close.
Yeah.
So I think he probably did the wise thing, whether or not the tower agreed with it or not, you know.
Yeah, and the worst that happens to you in that situation is you have to write a letter.
Mm-hmm. Of why you disobeyed a request.
Yeah, why you varied from your clearance. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a matter of fact, when I called in and he told me to report, 2 miles or something like that from basically entering the downwind. And it was – I couldn't get a word in edgewise. Dean and the Seminole behind him and the tower, you know, just – was chewing up all the airtime on the radio, because, you know, he was telling the Cessna, he goes, continue downwind. Dean says, that's what I'm doing, you know. There was no time for me to even break in. And basically, next time I called him, I told him I was a beam the tower. So I was afraid I was going to get chewed out for getting in there. But, you know, we've established two-way communication, I guess, and he did expect me to get into the pattern, but I never have a chance to tell him I was, you know, 2 miles out or whatever.
Well, you're in Delta, yeah, right? Well, he doesn't control you in the air anyway, necessarily. I mean, his job is controlling people on the ground. So once you establish two-way communications, I mean, realistically, you can essentially do whatever you want, right? In the air.
In the pattern?
Yeah, because it's not controlled airspace. It's controlled on the ground. In a way, is basically what they're doing.
Well, they're still there for spacing and stuff to, you know, keep you guys apart in the air.
They control access to the runways. They control the Delta. I mean, that's my understanding of it, at least.
Yes, but they're not in no way. They don't have to space you in the air. They don't have to they don't have to do that in the air. They just need to get you on the ground in spacing that prevents collisions on the ground. Because isn't that the main difference between Charlie and Delta, is that Charlie is actually controlled airspace, where they actually separate you in the air. That's how I understood it.
Now that you mention it, I think I get what you're saying, and I think you're even right. I don't know. It's I don't know if it just doesn't seem the case because that airspace is so stinking busy. You know, it's the busiest general aviation airport in the country, and it is live and popping from, you know, before sun up to after sundown. And there's planes in the air going on both runways all day, all night, pretty much. And I think starting at the beginning of the year, they're going to be open till midnight. They're open to 9 o'clock right now, but they're going to have controllers there till midnight.
I mean, they do have to do, I mean, obviously they do sequence you in the air and do all of that basically to get you on the ground safely and in order, but just from a FAR standpoint, they're not actually doing anything necessarily for you in the air.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of in the air, John, you haven't, you say you haven't been up, unfortunately.
No.
You've been real busy, I know.
Between moving and this basically new job, and then I'm working on I'm actually coding right now for a an election, I help out with this open source election software, and we have an election next week, so I've been busy with that, and yeah, so next week I'll finally have some time.
You've been put in charge of fixing the Florida electronic vote casting or ballot casting.
Yeah, sure.
Hanging Chad 2.
We actually had our print server was named Hanging Chad in the lab. It's a cool project, but yeah, I've been really busy with that and the moving jobs and house. So
yeah, it's good to be busy. Well, I'm happy for you for your new job. Sounds like you like it.
Yeah. My hope is that once I start seeing paychecks from this job, I'll actually be able to fly more. So, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. You guys know I started a new job a couple months ago. I took a position as the director of IT for my church. And so I quit IBM. I'd been at IBM for about eight years. So it's kind of a big step, and it just kind of came at the right time. It was kind of funny is that a guy who was the network administrator of the church quit like a year and a half ago, and he had told me that he had recommended me to his boss to take his position, but they never did anything. They just kind of did without him, you know, how trying to do more with less, you know how that goes. So they had a contractor who they paid, you know, to work like 4 hours a week, and then he volunteered 4 hours a week too. They had him for a long time, and then they decided that they did want someone full time. And what was funny is that a year and a half ago, if they had asked me, I would have turned down the job because I had just started to get to work from home at IBM, and it was a new I was doing a new job, so it was still interesting to me because it was new. But that newness wore off, and I found myself being very bored from day to day. And so, you know, this position presented itself at just the right time. So I jumped on it, and I'm really, you know, enjoying it, other than I've been fighting a battle with this stupid firewall for a week now. But overall, it's fun to work on new things finally and get back into the networking side of things, which I have a little more experience in and I enjoy versus comparing spreadsheets from one to another all day long.
But what's not to love?
So, Mark, you got to take a nice ride, long distance cross country in a nice Cirrus, huh?
Crickets.
Mark? Chirp, chirp.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I muted it because my daughter was in here making noise, and I was like, so surprise.
Surprise.
Yeah, I did September 30th. I got to go. A buddy of mine called me a couple days prior, and he's like, hey, what are you doing Saturday? Nothing much. Hey, you want to help me install some software on my in-law's computer? I'm like, sure, I can do that. He goes, I'm going to need more than just a couple hours. I'm like, okay, I can make time for you. It's not a problem. And he goes, well, it's in Long Beach. I'm like, okay. And for those of you who don't remember where I'm at, I'm outside of Sacramento. So from Sacramento to Long Beach, it's about 350 miles. So I'm like, so we're going to take the Cirrus down to Long Beach? He's like, yeah. You up for that? I'm like, what time do we leave?
Done.
You know? So, yeah, we left here about 6 a.m. on Saturday morning and got down there. Beautiful weather, beautiful sunset, just flying down the Sacramento Valley on the east side, and full IFR flight plan, which was really nice. When you're routed IFR, it makes your trip so much easier, especially once you get down into the LA basin. But yeah, we were being handled by all the controllers the entire time, and it was eventless for the most part because we were just following the magenta line. But yeah, mm-hmm. Once we got down into down into the LA basin, it got a little exciting just because of traffic down there. But it was probably one of the most clear days I've ever seen in the down in the basin. We came over the mountain ridge right there, and you would swear that we had just had a storm come through and blow all the garbage out of the air because there was barely any smog, and we descended right down into Long Beach, and it was a beautiful day. So his sister-in-law picked us up. I went over and we did a simple Windows 7 install and spent a few hours there. They bought us lunch, and we went right back over to the FBO. But what's funny, when we got to the FBO down in Long Beach, we come pulling up into the – you expect an FBO. It's a whole bunch of, you know, little GA planes. No, we ended up parking in between a Gulfstream, a King Air. It was us in the Cirrus, and then a another Gulfstream. And then directly across the runway from us is where they build the C-17s.
All the pretty planes.
And then we're walking through the hangar. It's funny. I felt very out of place. We walked into the FBO's hangar. The floors were polished. Mm-hmm. And there was two more Gulfstreams inside the hangar. And I was like, I don't think I belong here. this is
I'm not worthy.
This is not the people that I hang out with. You know, I fly an Archer. I don't fly with Gulfstreams. You know, but yeah, it was a really good day.
Did you get any time a little bit?
I actually tried to do the takeoff in the morning. The one thing that I wasn't aware of for the Cirrus is that it's differential braking for steering. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that, mm-hmm. And he warned me. He goes, okay, you're differential braking until you get up to about 40 knots, and you're going to get some effectiveness on the rudder, and you know, then you'll have authority that way. So it was a little, you know, I'm looking for rudder pedal. I mean, I'm looking for you know, steering with the pedals, and I'm it was a little bit backwards thinking for me. But yeah, it took off fine, and then once we got up to altitude, he contacted NorCal Approach and got our IFR plan started, and he dialed it. He had already had it all dialed into the pair of 430s, and it was okay.
Avidyne.
And he was cleared to go, and blip, you know, and punched it in, and off we went. But coming out of
so, how was it flying that?
You know what? I didn't expect it to be as sensitive as it was. I mean, you literally, it's kind of like, not that I've got stick time.
You didn't have to arm wrestle it back and forth.
You know, I was going
to
say, not that I've got stick time in an F-16 like some other podcasters. However, it was very nimble. You know, I didn't have to hardly move it at all. And you think about, you know, a bank to the right, and it was, you were doing a bank to the right or bank to the left. And as we were coming back over the ridge, we were probably at about 11,000 feet heading north on the coast side of California, heading back into the valley. I was hand flying it, and he goes, okay, just don't bust my altitude. Keep me between, you know, this 100 feet. I'm like, it was fine until we hit a lot of turbulence, and I'm fighting to kind of go, okay, keep it here. And he's watching me, and all of a sudden it just dropped like 80 feet. And he's like, okay, let me go ahead and take it. I'm like, I wasn't nervous or anything. It was just, he's like, we're going to get a call here in a second. And 15 seconds later, SoCal Approach or SoCal Departure calls us up. Cirrus, what's your intentions? Where are you heading to? You know,
usually they'll say altitude.
Yeah, it was. We were right at the point where we were going to get a handoff anyway. And we wanted to go direct. Well, we were going to go to one location. He goes, how about we just send you direct here, which took us probably two waypoints out of our course, and which made it faster for us. And he goes, oh, that's cool. Thanks. You know, and, oh, we'll make that change and be on our way. And
so you just change it in the Garmin.
Yeah, he basically can go through and he can delete a couple of waypoints and just steer in whatever the next one is. And, you know, your little magenta line changes and off you go. One of the things that I was going to say is he filed and got it. And he says, sometimes you'll file this one departure out of Long Beach and you don't always get it. And it was the Anaheim 3 departure. And if you look it up, you can see it takes you directly over LAX. And again, on a clear day, and it was probably – we left, I want to say
– so this was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Right?
Yeah, so it wasn't quite – it was still in the midday. Midday on a Saturday, so the traffic wasn't too bad. But yeah, he filed for it, and he got it, and we did the Anaheim 3 departure out of Long Beach, and it took us directly over. We went up the coast for a little bit, Santa Monica and all that stuff where, you know, all the celebrities are, and then we, you know, headed our course back into the valley. But it was gorgeous. It was gorgeous. Some of the stuff we saw, you know, you're flying over and there's just big bird after big bird after big bird coming in. And, you know, I'm looking down and I can identify what carrier was landing and taking off. So it was pretty cool.
So what altitude were you over top of LAX?
We at that time, I think we were probably 2,500, maybe 3,000 feet.
So, I've transitioned Phoenix quite a bit. And so when you transition there, Bravo, now I haven't done it when I'm on an IFR. So how does it take us through how that works? I'm sure I guess you probably don't contact LAX and request to transition the Bravo because you've got a flight plan. So how do
you? Correct. You've got an IFR flight plan. You're looking at. I'm gonna actually pull up four flight because I think I still have it in my.
Because we have corridors, you know, on either side of the runway that we are told, okay, fly at or above 4,500 feet.
Correct. Now that's for VFR. So when they know you're VFR traffic and you're not instrument rated.
Are you at the ends of the runway or are you flying over the top of it or?
We were right over the top.
Yeah.
I would say if we were probably maybe a quarter mile west of the tower, but I think that's a known IFR route. So you know they know that the traffic's going to be right there. And there was only one time when we took off out of Long Beach, they said climb and maintain, and it was 800 feet or something like that to hold us at a certain altitude. They said okay, now turn heading. Whatever happened to be, which took us directly over LAX, said, okay, now continue to climb out. And I think it said 2,500 feet or 3,000 feet. I'm not sure what it was. But we were basically climbing over LAX and up the coastline. And eventually we got up to, I want to say, probably 9,000. And then they cleared us. It's different. You know, the altitudes are like, you know, our VFR altitudes that we're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's different with an IFR plan. It's, you know, because they've got complete vision of all the traffic.
Yeah.
They'll tell you, you know, and I'm thinking it was weird flying at some of these altitudes they were telling us, but that's where they wanted us for separation.
Mm-hmm.
So we cruised out, and once we were north of the LA Basin area there, they're like, okay, continue to climb out on your S-filed and – you know, what was it? Resumo navigation based on your flight plan.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did. And then, you know, once we got back into the valley of, you know, if anybody's come down I-5, you hit the Grapevine. We were just crossing the Grapevine. It's a, you know, the big mountain range right there north of the LA Valley, LA Basin, rather. Once we got above there, then it became a pretty quiet, pretty boring flight. We did have one little bit of excitement. If you're familiar with the California Valley, we have Lemoore Naval Air Station, big naval training base. This is where a lot of if you learning how to fly the F-18 or the Super Hornet, this is where you're going to get your training. And there's actually five MOAs right there, but they're all together right there on top of Lemoore. And so we're cruising to the west of Lemoore as we're supposed to, and then we get this call, 749 or Papa Golf, traffic 12 o'clock, 1,000 feet above DC-10. We're like, what? What it was there was a FedEx DC-10 that was at Lemoore that had dropped off some cargo, and they had taken off, and they were actually looping around. They basically had a southbound departure, but were climbing out, did a 360 climb out, and then it put them right on the Victor Airway. And it was literally, we're looking up going, hi.
Yeah.
Is it 1,000 feet above us going, wow, that's not something you see every day.
That's a big airplane.
That was a big airplane. You know, then once we got farther north, everything was pretty eventless after that. We got to fly over my house, did a 360 over the house, saw my wife and kids, and landed pretty quick after that. So, but it was a really good day. It was so clear. Didn't have a lot of turbulence at all, which was nice in some of the areas you'd expect it to.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't affect me much anymore. You know, like early on in training, you start getting bounced around. You're, you know, starting to white knuckle it.
Yeah.
You know, we hit turbulence, and I'm just like, all right, we're all along for the ride. There's nothing you can really do about it. You know. So, but yeah, it was a great day. I did get to hit, you know, hand fly it a little bit. But for the most part, because we were on an IFR plan, we were just following the magenta line.
Did he autopilot it, or?
That's what it. He had the through the Avidyne. It was It was all on autopilot.
Cool.
I would say probably 90% of the flight was autopilot. So I was giving my buddy Keith a hard time. I'm like, you're more of a resource manager instead of a pilot. He just kind of looks at me and goes, "Shut up."
System managers, yes.
Exactly. But you know, it was nice to be in the air. I miss it a lot. You know, luckily I can say that my business that pays for the flying is finally starting to pick up. So hopefully I'll be able to get that last 10 or 12 hours done and, you know, get it done. That way I can go fly on my own when I want to fly.
Yes, that sounds good. I can't wait to hear you back in the plane.
And check ride.
Yeah. And just, you know, now you got the camera. You got your camera.
Yeah.
And so get to see some flying videos from you.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait. It's funny, as you were talking, I was actually on Runway Finder plotting, you know, if I was to fly down to Deer Valley, how would I go? And I was actually plotting the course. I was like, that's a long flight. It'd be fun.
Where could we meet? Could you maybe we could meet in Lake Havasu sometime.
You know what? That was one of the things. I was actually – My fuel stop would have to be around Victorville, which is either Victorville or Bishop or I think Bishop is the big. What is this one here? Palm Springs is the direct flight from you. So between there's a couple of you got to make some turns because you got to miss Edwards and you've got to miss 29 Palms and you know
yeah.
So. Yeah, but I was thinking that, you know, once I've finally done, then yeah, we could actually hook up down here somewhere.
That would be good. Let's see. How about Brad? You've been flying lots of IFR training and been getting in some real IMC, right?
Yeah, I've been trying to. You know, it's funny you guys are talking about the Bravo transitions and all of that stuff, and sort of the dirty little secret about flying IFR is that none of that stuff applies anymore.
Yeah.
You don't ever worry about airspace ever. You go where they vector you, and wherever they vector you, it's okay to go there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to Mark Pollard about that. I don't know, it's 2-3 months ago now, and he said that he prefers flying IFR just because it's you need to start here, you need to end there, and as long as you're in contact, yeah, none of the airspace applies. So because they're going to tell you where you need to be.
I like that, to be honest with you, and that's why I like. You know, getting flight following and just all of that stuff, because it makes me feel like I'm not alone up here and someone else is out there looking out for me too. You know, and it will kind of keep you out of trouble. You know.
Yeah, there's a price that you pay, which is you have to go where they tell you to go and stay. You know, stay on that course within very tight tolerances. But the flight planning is relatively straightforward because you just say this is where I'm going and get me there, and if especially if you stay in radar contact, life is pretty good.
You know, it's funny, I was after taking this flight with Keith and seeing how easy it was, or easier, I mean, again, you got the tighter tolerances, but you learn to fly that way. Since they made the change in the regs that you can actually do concurrent private and IFR training, I was seriously thinking about doing that. I mean, if I'm going to keep flying, you know, I'm going to keep flying anyway. I might as well, if I can do my IFR or learn IFR while I'm doing my private, legally do that now. Why not do that? Why not become a better pilot at the end of the road?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and the by the way, the instrument time that you accrue during your private applies towards your instrument.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you want to do more than what's necessary, you know, that's all fine. And I think that's pretty much the difference is I think the only way that you can do the concurrent stuff is through a 141 school,
I think so. And mine actually is a 141 school. So
okay.
I'm seriously going to look into it. I mean, I know it's going to be another, you know, probably another couple $1,000s on top of what I'm doing. But you know what? I'm already in school and I'm already paying that instructor. So why not do them both? You know, I have to talk to them to see if it's even a realistic thing to look at. But
they have to have an approved syllabus and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it, but yeah, it was something that I was looking at when I started my private. They were just talking about how, yeah, you know, we're going to be able to do this concurrent training, and I thought, well, that'd be great. But it just didn't work out. The timing wasn't there.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's nice. And a lot of this other stuff, like for your commercial, like any of your PIC time that you do before that will apply, so you don't have to pay for that twice.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like my cross-country time, even the cross-countries, solo cross-countries that I did during my private count toward the cross-country requirement that I have to have for my instrument.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so it's not like, you know, at least you don't have to pay for something twice that way, which is, you know, I think they realized, you know, it's the same thing, and, you know, it's already way expensive to get your pilot's license. What can we do to, you know, make things a little more affordable and make a little bit more sense? And that was a good choice.
Yeah, and I think it's especially good for the folks who are intending to go into the airlines as a career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just pick it off and get your instrument at the same time. And then essentially I think what you get out of that is you don't have the 50-hour cross-country rule. Is probably the I'm sorry, 50-hour PIC, 50-hour PIC cross-country rule.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a big part. It used to be 250 hours way back in the day. And then they've lowered it to 50 hours. But then if you do it simultaneously, I think you're exempt from that requirement.
Yeah, but the only question I have there is if you are going on and getting your commercial, you're going to have to fly that time anyway. Because you need, what, 250 to get your commercial, don't you know?
It's either 200 or 250, yeah. It's a bunch.
So I don't necessarily know if that really helps any of the career people.
Well, you can get that a lot safer and a lot faster if you have an instrument rating.
True.
So there's just more days that you can go fly. It makes you a better pilot. I mean, you just...
Oh, yeah, I don't disagree with that at all.
Yeah,
it's a good thing to have. It also makes it the whole, I want to go somewhere with an airplane and have a fairly reliable schedule. It makes that possible. You know, I was worried if I flew anywhere a long ways away for a weekend, am I going to be able to get back?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or am I going to be stranded here for days and days and days while I'm waiting for weather to clear?
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, I can still get stranded from weather, but it's generally going to be a lot shorter period of time.
So how much more do you think you have to go there for your license?
I passed the halfway to 40. Assuming I can get it done in something close to 40 hours, I've got 17 hours to go.
Cool.
Nice.
Because you're moving right through it, really, it feels like.
Well, not as fast as I did my private. I did my whole private 40 hours in about 3 months.
Wow.
And I was grinding pretty hard at it, but this life kind of has gotten in the way and so it's just taken me more clock time. Slowly getting better at the procedures. The procedures are really the harder parts of it. You were talking about standard instrument departure, a SID departure out of Long Beach, mm-hmm. Mark, and that's you know, one of the things that comes along with flying IFR is there's, because everybody's under control of air traffic control, and especially in a busy airspace like around the LA basin, they'll have just standard routes that they'll want you to fly. And so the Anaheim 3 departure is a standard instrument departure, and you have to know what those are and know how to read them and know if you can accept it or not. Most of the SIDs that occur around Minneapolis-St. Paul and actually even I'm looking at the Anaheim 3-1, it very quickly gets to a fairly high altitude. A lot of the SIDS, and especially the SIDS, are standard instrument departure to get out of the airport. There's a equivalent to get into the airport area, which is called a STAR, a standard terminal arrival route. And those are very, at least around here, they're very geared towards the airlines. So they're going to have, they'll start at 18,000 feet and bring you down from there. And they'll be, you know, you'll be at 18,000 feet, 250 miles away from the airport. And it's like, yeah, I'm not going to be there.
I'll talk to you when I'm 15 out.
You know, it's just not going to be something I'm going to need to worry about.
Sure, and I'm sure for like in the LA Basin, the SID is such that they're going to look for a 2,000 foot per minute climb out too, to get you up and out of the way.
It's a 1,000 foot per minute climb. Generally, there are some funny rules though, especially around places that have big rocks sticking up out of the ground, where they'll give you, you have to be able to maintain, like I'm looking actually at the Anaheim 3 departure. If you're taking off out of 16 left or 16 right, if you're taking off out of 16 right, you have to be climbing a minimum of 507 feet per nautical mile. So that you can clear whatever is sticking up off the end of 16 right.
Right.
And those are a really big deal. And when you get into like Cody, Wyoming and places like that, where you're in a valley surrounded by mountains and you're flying IFR, so you can't see the mountain to avoid it. They'll say, you know, you fly this heading and you have to maintain this climb rate or you're not going to make it. So you have to do all the calculations of, you know, hey, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon in the middle of July, and am I going to be able to?
Density altitude is really high, and
yeah. So there's some more head work that goes into it.
Sure.
Whereas if you flew out of their VFR and you're flying at a big rock sticking up out of the ground, you would just turn, and you don't have that option because you can't see the big rock.
And a whole new set of terminology that you're using now too.
Yeah, they're new charts that look very funny at first, and new terms and new sets of things to worry about that are just on top of your VFR stuff. So, you know, there's a fair amount of head work that goes into it, and trying to keep all of this stuff straight when you're motoring along, you know, in the clouds with, and you're like, boy, I hope I'm not going to run into anything or do something stupid. You know, the good news is though that you won't see whatever it is that you're about to run into.
How is that good news?
Well, you don't have that.
You don't have that stress.
Yeah, you don't have that period of, oh no.
Yeah.
You know what's funny though? You're talking about the different terminology. My second dual cross country, we were actually coming back. We had gone out, we were on our way back in, and we were trying to talk to Oakland Approach. And even though we were not even anywhere near Oakland, or actually it's Oakland Center, it just happened to be their airspace they control. Here I am, you know, student pilot VFR, barely trying to talk to her, and she's just like ignoring me.
Exactly.
And really, I mean, it was like, okay, I know you're there. Shut up. I don't want to talk to you because you're just, you know, student pilot and you're fine. You're not near anybody. But my instructor was like, okay, she's ignoring you. He goes, here, let me show you something. And he popped on, same exact, you know, tail number and everything. But he spoke as an instrument pilot. She popped right on and said, da 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 da, take a heading of this way. And, you know, it was like, it was a whole different level of communication. And when he did instrument speak, it was, oh, this is somebody that I need to talk to. Mm-hmm. You know, and it wasn't, I mean, it was literally something as simple as, I think he threw out a couple of intersection points,
right?
You know, and as soon as he said those names, this is where we're at, intersection such and such, she knew that he was an instrument pilot, and okay, I need to talk to him and get him vectored somewhere. You know, but you know, Joe, student pilot, just futz around out there for a while. I'll get back to you.
and that's very true. It's big on phraseology because the you get into these busy airspaces and the frequencies are so congested that if you can't go quickly, I've heard about guys who were, you know, several hundred hour VFR pilots trying to fly into Chicago, and they just told them to go away. that you don't even approach the airport. You're not gonna come in today because you're gonna screw it up for everybody.
Luckily, they're fairly nice around DC.
Except for those big F-16s.
Well, I think they realize that it's a bunch of BS anyway, so they're really nice about it. But I've never had any issues as a student pilot out here. Like, I'd stumble in all over the place, and so far I haven't, you know, they haven't ignored me or been
so
mean at all. They've been really good.
So have you got that SFRA, Special Flight Rules Area?
Yes.
Yeah. So
I started my training in the SFRA. My first 13 hours was in the SFRA.
That's what I thought.
I never even left it.
Okay. That's what I tried to remember that. And I'm like, I think you flew a lot in there, didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and here's the weird thing too, is when you think about it, I mean, I'm out there doing my primary training in the SFRA. I'm out there doing stalls. I'm doing steep turns and all that. It's really not that bad. It's just the fact that you're forced to talking to somebody. So it's kind of like, instead of having optional flight following, you're kind of forced to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the only difference. And the biggest pain is honestly the fact that I have to call twice on the ground. I have to call once to get my flight brief, which I get anyway, and to file the SFRA flight plan. No big deal. But then you have to call again right before you go up to get your transponder code. And that's kind of the biggest hassle, I think, with the whole thing.
And they have a special section of codes just for the SFRA, I believe. From what I
– Probably.
A separate range.
Well, yeah. It was just like versus just any other, you know, VFR transponder code or whatever for other pilots. You know, if I just heard this on another podcast that they said that there's a specially assigned set of codes just for the SFRA, I guess. And maybe that's just so when you're up in the air and you're squawking a certain code or whatever, they know, you know, where you're coming from, where you're going in relation to the SFRA, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, and they also have on
you know, there's some sort of test you got to take and training or something for it. Is that right? For the SFRA?
For the freeze, is that right? Or is it for
well,
the
Well, okay. So I'll
maybe maybe I'm getting something.
First of all, they have actually separate controllers during busy times for VFR traffic in the SFRA. So when there's a lot of people around, you're kind of on a separate frequency and with like a specific controller. Which does help them a little bit. So they kind of separate the SFRA from the IFR traffic, I think. But as far as the actual what you have to do, within 60 miles of the DCA VOR, you have to go on the FAST website and take a quick training. It's like a 30-minute power. It's essentially a PowerPoint presentation that just describes, here's the intercept procedures, here's what you need to know, here's what you have to do. And then at the end of that, when you're done, I don't know if there's like a short quiz or not, I don't remember. And then you just get a little printout that says, I took the SFRA training, and you just keep that with you. And that's all you need to get in the SFRA.
Is there a sticker for your plane too?
No.
Yeah, it's the pilot.
Yeah. The pilot and it's literally, you just print it out on your printer, and I just taped it to the back of my logbook, and that's it. The freeze, however, is significantly different. You actually have to go get a background check, fingerprints, a bunch of other stuff. I think you have to drive to like one location to be able to do it. And once you get all of that done and your background check, I think, passes, then you get your own special like pilot ID code that I think is used in conjunction with an SFRA transponder code and a whole bunch of other stuff. I'm not even going to bother with any of that.
I think that's what I was thinking of in my head then, I guess, right?
Yeah. The freeze is the thing that just nobody, a lot of people just don't even bother with. And it kind of sucks because there are three airports that are inside the freeze that are GA airports. College Park being the oldest airport, I believe, in America is one of them. So it kind of sucks for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess for like if I wanted to fly, like I wouldn't even be allowed to land there, right? Having not passed or taken the training for it or whatever.
In where?
Where you were just talking about.
The CFRA or the free? Well, either one.
Yeah.
Yeah. You wouldn't be able to come in legally.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to go in the SFRA, but that's the easier one. You would be able to get into that if you just took 30 minutes online.
Mm-hmm. If you knew ahead of time you were supposed to take that.
Whenever you call flight service to get your briefing,
mm-hmm.
even if you're not going in the SFRA, the fact that you're flying within 60 miles means that they have to ask you if you actually took that course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So every time I call up, they're like, are you familiar with the special flight rules area effective December, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I have to be like, yeah, I know.
I got it.
So. It's really not that bad as long as you stay away from the freeze. And as long as you do that, you're pretty good. It's not too bad. You get used to talking to people.
Good deal.
So.
Well, I think that probably catches us up, I guess, is the word I was trying to say.
Yeah, we need to start flying more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. During all of my flight training, I had money in my pocket to go fly all the time. I had lots of side work, and now that I got my license, I haven't had hardly any side work, and I haven't been able to go fly. I'm, like, kind of bummed. I'm looking around the house. What could I sell on eBay?
Join a flying club.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm working on it. I'm really trying to. We'll see how it goes with the job and all that. So,
join a flying club, but then you actually have to fly because flying clubs, as it turns out, are a lot like health clubs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they rely on a certain percentage of the people just paying in every month
that don't ever go. Mm-hmm.
That don't use it.
Yeah.
Don't be one of those.
No.
I don't plan on it. I figured out a whole budget for 30 or 40 hours a year. So I can do it for about 3,000 a year, 8,000 the first year. So it's probably not going to be any time in the next 2 years, but you know, we'll see. I can hope.
Mm-hmm.
It'll come.
Yeah.
The members of the In the Pattern podcast are participating as private individuals. Their comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the various organizations they work with, the instructors they learn from, or the flight schools they attend. Remember, these guys are student pilots, so anything you hear on this podcast that sounds like advice on an aircraft operation is obviously from the perspective of student pilot. You should always consider your own situation, consult your instructor, remember your training, and fly the airplane. Cleared for the option.
So, I guess as we're wrapping up here, anybody have any quick shout-outs?
Let's wrap it up. I didn't prepare real well for some shout-outs, so I can't really think of any off the top of my head, although I know I was probably meaning to shout-out to somebody. I know I missed Copper State, which was an aviation fly-in down here in Phoenix last weekend, I believe it was. Might have been the weekend before. No, it was last weekend. Yeah, and I had to go to our daughter's swim meets instead. So, which was kind of a bummer because I missed out on seeing a few guys again, like Bill Will and Mike Daniels and Ten Dancer. You know, those guys are all going to be over there, which would have been cool to see them. But unfortunately, it happened on a busy weekend where I had other things going on, so I couldn't make it. But maybe next time, and of course, hopefully, we can meet those guys again back in Oshkosh.
Yeah,
we got another little fly-in this weekend over at the Scottsdale Airport, which they haven't had one over there, and wow, I can't remember. It had to have been at least, it seems like, 10 years. So. And that's real close, actually, because, you know, the Deer Valley to Scottsdale is only 10 nautical miles in the air, at least. So I'll just drive over there and check that out. It should be pretty cool. I don't think it's going to be an air show per se, pretty much probably more static stuff and maybe some light stuff in the air. So, but we'll see. Hopefully it's exciting. I haven't been to that one over there in, like I said, at least 10 years. So it's something.
Very good.
Cool.
How about you guys? Any shout outs?
I've been too busy.
Give a shout out to Minneapolis Approach for giving me a pretty much instant IFR clearance the other night as I was flying back. And I flew up to a nearby airport, and the weather started to come down. And so I made my my CFII come back with me. So I would have to drive him back up to said airport afterwards. But it was a very good, it was a good choice. I ended up in needing to get pretty much an instant IFR clearance, and Minneapolis Approach was more than happy to oblige. It's like we're motoring along, and all of a sudden, poof, we're hard IFR.
All of a sudden, those clouds appeared from nowhere, huh?
Yeah, it was just bang, we're in it.
Right,
okay.
Right in the soup, huh?
I guess I don't need the foggles anymore.
Turn on the windshield wipers.
I was very glad I had somebody in the right seat. Cool. That was about it.
Awesome. Yeah, I look forward to doing that. Want to do
Me
that.
Too.
You don't have clouds, Chris.
Yeah, it's true.
I do.
Yep. Yeah, you have the advantage that you have clouds and they're not always full of ice.
Wow. I mean, you know.
Our first frost was 7 weeks ago.
Wow.
We were probably 2 weeks ago. So.
And it's early. By the way, for those of you who are listening, it's not actually 2012 yet when we recorded this. It's actually November 3rd.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh. Ouch.
Was that a dig?
No faith.
Burn.
You know, as soon as this election is done, I'm going to pluck these out in like, man.
I know you will, because the last time I gave you a hard time about him right before Oshkosh, you banged out like three of them.
Oh, yeah. He was a machine.
Well, and then I came back and I had 3 weeks of a ton of work, and then I had the move to deal with, and then the switching jobs, and then now this election. It's like I can't catch a break, so that's it. After
just as we get into holiday season, you'll have lots of time on your hands.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You don't have kids yet.
No.
I don't.
And 7 weeks ago, I was still sweating just walking to my car.
Well, since our first frost 7 weeks ago, we've had weather in the 90s.
So. Oh, wow. Isn't that weird?
Now we're pretty consistently getting into the mid-20s at night.
All right. Well, let's call it a wrap then.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. It's good talking to y'all.
Yeah. Good getting back in touch with you guys. Hopefully we can do it again in the next 30 to 45 days and have more to talk about.
So, Chris, where can we find you on the internet?
All right. You can find me at chris@inthepatternpodcast.com or Twitter, MyTransponder, or YouTube at CHOLUBAZ. That's CHOLUBAZ. And, of course, Google Plus as well, Chris Holub.
And Brad, where can we find you?
You can reach me at brad@inthepatternpodcast.com, Twitter at Brad Kane, MyTransponder at Kane, and Google Plus at Brad Kane. And Kane is spelled just like it sounds, Kilo, Oscar, Echo, Hotel, November.
All right, Mark, where can we find you?
You can find me at mark@inthepatternpodcast.com, on Twitter as Student Pilot Mark. That's STDNT Pilot Mark. On my transponder as Mark Lacoste, and on Google Plus as Mark Lacoste.
Cool. And you can find me at john@inthepatternpodcast.com, on Twitter as Pilot Conway. My transponder should be Pilot Conway as well, and also on Google Plus as John L. Conway the Fourth, if you are adventurous. And you can reach all of us at inthepatternpodcast.com, on Twitter at inthepattern, and the My Transponder group page for In the Pattern. We also have a Facebook page for In the Pattern. Or you can search iTunes and search for In the Pattern Podcast. Go ahead and give us a review rating. Help us spread the word and get some other listeners, and it'll help anybody find us on iTunes. And finally, we also have a Google Voice number. That's 707-PCAST-01. That's 707 Papa Charlie Alpha Sierra Tango 01.
Well, that wraps up this episode of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'd like to thank y'all for listening. Remember, make left traffic, and you're cleared for the option.
This and other great shows at the Aviation Podcast Network.
TheVoicesInYourHead.com.
All right, guys. We'll wrap it up. Oh, shoot. Did someone record this? I'm just kidding. I got it.
I would have killed you. I would have flown out.
We just send up episode 18 with just the bars and the sound. You know, just the colored bars that you see on the screen.
The view
with
meters.
Either that or elevator music. I'd probably fill out, you know, an hour just elevator music.
Oh, there you go.
Just hold music for your conference call.
That'd be so bad. This episode of the End of the Pattern Podcast brought to you by...
Oh, you know, I forgot to mention something. We are officially a year old.
Yeah, we had a birthday.
I had to renew the domain. So it's really not. It's. Oh, God damn. That had to be the one time I'm unmuted.
He's like, liar, liar, liar.